You're listening to Food Tech Talk, Supply Chain Insights from Farm to Fork, a podcast discussing the latest trends and technology in the food and supplement industries, featuring conversations with regulatory experts, quality and safety champions, and thought leaders across the industry. I'm your host, Lydia Adams. Let's jump right in. Today, we are thrilled to welcome Nirdesh Dalal, the Senior Food and Beverage Scientist at Lupta, offering high-end holistic solutions for animal feeding in a company focused on trust and innovation. This culture of innovation sits well with Nirdesh, as he is a person who thrives in these environments that are constantly embracing new technologies. Research, experimentation, and applications are aptitudes that have served him well in his career so far, starting at the A.D. Patel Institute of Technology, where his food science education began in earnest, onto the senior roles that decorate his resume today. So we're very excited to have you on. Welcome, Nirdesh.
Thank you for such a kind introduction, Lydia. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Yeah, we're really excited to have you. Now, obviously, you have many years of experience, and I just barely scratched the surface. So I was hoping you could tell us just a little bit more about your background before we get into our main topic questions.
As a kid, I was really, really intrigued by the food, as everyone is, but I was a little bit more. And I was more curious. I think the way I became a scientist today was the journey which started during my childhood, because of my curiosity to understand everything or to learn everything or to question everything. I'm like, why are we tasting this? Why do we like this? Why do we like certain kind of taste buds? Or what is the driving, or what is the relation of ourselves with our food? So that curiosity was like intrigued in me at a very earlier childhood. So I think that's what led me to the journey of becoming a scientist today. And so in my quest of becoming a scientist, I was, when it came to choose my career path, I was pretty sure that I wanted to do something in food and beverage industry. So coming from a family of an engineer and a doctor, and especially in a brown household, it was really tough for me to convince them. I mean, especially having doctor mother, she was more about I want my son to be a doctor. So I was but
science.
Exactly. I want my science. So that, I think that was one of the reasons where it was more convincing for them, at least he's in the science field. So they kind of allowed me to pursue what I wanted. And I became a food processing engineer to start with, because at that age, I was more curious on B2C industries. But when I was doing my engineering, my curiosity deepened. And I'm I need to learn more. Why is this happening? What's the real science behind it? What's the real chemistry behind it? And I decided to pursue my master's. So as soon as I completed my bachelor's of engineering, I came over here to do my master's in food science. So I went to Drexel University in Philadelphia. I'm a proud dragon. And I graduated with cum laude honors. And so that's basically my education. And after that, my first ever work experience was working with a fresh produce company called Lancaster Foods. It's based in Jessup, Maryland. So I moved to DC from Philly. But when I was working there as a food safety and quality assurance. Because that's the first opportunity I got. And you know how the first opportunities are, you grab anything you get in your way. But that actually helped me a lot in realizing what I really, really wanted to do. And when I was working as food safety, I realized the whole reason I chose to be in food industry was about to learn about my curiosity and my interest in it. I always wanted to be a product developer or a research and development. So I left that within a month. I'm again, it's a big risk because there was nothing lined up. And I was this is not really what I want to do. So I want to focus. And I thought that if I don't leave right now, I might get stuck over here for a long time. So that was, again, a very hard decision, which I made it in a split second. And I just went ahead with it and came to New Jersey. I had a lot of friends over here in New Jersey. So I'm I'll find something over here because a lot of flavor companies are over here. So came over here, started looking for work opportunities. And that's when I was with Dyna Food, which is Symrise right now, as a product and applications development specialist. Again, that's the best learning platform I could have ever got because I was the only technical person they had. I mean, initially, my hiring manager was there, and then he left within like 3 months of me getting hired. So I used to cater to all the salespeople and category managers in the entire North America region, including Canada and Mexico. So I was the point of contact on any technical like complications which Diana faced. And so giving a little background about Diana Food, it was a natural food and vegetable ingredient company. So they still make natural fruits and vegetables in different forms, such as like powder, flakes, roller dried, spray dried. So I used to do a lot of applications on that. And I did that for like good 3.5 years. And then when I thought that I was ready for a growth, ready to jump, I learned whatever necessary knowledge or technical skills I needed to be in this industry. I was looking for growth opportunities. And that's when this really good opportunity came in front of me, which was to be a technical service lead for food and nutrition department for Sun Chemical. So basically, they are like a chemical company, but they were really looking to go into food and nutrition. So they needed someone technical, and that's when I joined them. So for that, I moved to Cincinnati, Ohio, and they basically had cosmetic lab, which was a spare cosmetic lab. It was not functional. So my job was to like kind of like revamp the lab and to make it more functional in all the categories, but it was more focused on color applications, the natural colors. But I was only there for a year because one of my really good friends who worked with me at Symrise was over here at Lukta. And when Lukta basically was more into coffee flavor applications. And they decided that they're going to expand their horizons in savory and sweets. So because I was the only technical person at Diana where my buddy was, and he saw that like I could do all various cross-functional categories such as sweets, coffee, beverages, savory, confectionery, baby food. I've done baby food work too. So that has actually helped me a lot in my career to have experience across the board. Like I always say that I'm like jack of all trades, but I never say master of none because I don't want people to know that. So he needed someone like that who could work in either like in both beverage, coffee, and sweet and wellness, and lead a team of sweet and wellness. So that's why I came over here. So, and here I am for a year and a half now.
I know we're going to talk a lot about innovation, but how much does our desire to innovate and introduce new flavors when working in the food lab, how does that go along with that quality and safety that you mentioned? Because I think they're both important, right? So how do you marry those things?
So for me, how I think, and coming from an engineering background, like it helps me to put in like mathematical term. So if you draw a Venn diagram, right, there is like set A and set B, but you also have a subset of it. So I feel like research and development and innovation is set A, quality is set B, and safety, but there is a gray area in between of that. So you always try to work in that gray area. So it's not black, it's not white, but you always try to work in the gray area where like, again, research, and it also depends because I mostly worked in a B2B industry, right? So for me, developing or coming innovations or product development comes as a priority, I would say. But for that priority, I would not want to sacrifice the quality and safety of the product. But having said that, if you work in this industry where like you work for clients where you know that this is not something which is 100% good for consumers, for people. But again, you stay in your lane, as I would like to put it. It is not a very polite way to put it, to stay in lane. But as my job is to someone who is to have innovations. So in my flavors or in my formulations on my development, I try to make sure that everything is really good. But when I give that to my consumer or my customer, what they do with it, again, I might not be very happy with what they do with it, but can I do anything with that? That's the whole question. But again, that comes to a consumer's point of view too, that like how educated the consumers are. I think that with this generation, my generation or a generation younger than me are very much educated in a way that like they look at the nutrition facts now, they look at the ingredient label now, they know what to go for or what not, and what can be good for their body and what cannot be a good for their body. And again, this is something which I'm not predicting, but I think I have a very strong feeling that like this next generation is not just going to be the advocate for healthy planet. They're going to be advocating for healthy lifestyle and healthy bodies too.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think consumers are increasingly demanding to know what's in their food and, you know, how everything comes together and how it's made. And I mean, it is important.
It's definitely. And like, again, I'll give you one example over here so our listeners can like see where are we shifting in terms of the regulations, how the government is also working with the industry, where we can see the changes. Like when I was working with Sun Chemical, there were a lot of companies who were trying to replace the artificial Y5 and Y6 color, which are yellow 5 and yellow 6 colors, which are used in a lot of beverages. But now a lot of states, and I know especially California, is coming out with a law that like if you are using artificial colors, you have to put it out in bold on your labels that this product contains artificial flavors. So a lot of the companies are trying, because again, you're not going to have a labeling contract with a company for one separate state or two separate states and then everything else. Because if you're changing your labels, you're going to change all across the board, right? So those kind of impacts are going to come. Same with the before, like artificial flavors and natural flavors, there was no distinction in terms of ingredient statement. Now we have the distinctions like, hey, natural flavors used, artificial flavor used, those kind of. And even with the labeling of organic and inorganic, we are reducing the amount of ingredients in terms of like, I'm just giving an example, don't quote me on that. It's like, let's say like 92% organic ingredients are used, you can still label as an organic. Now we are reducing that. So we all are working towards it. We all want to become healthy. We all want to become much more educated on it, but it will take time.
It is interesting to see how the industry is changing and how the consumer demands play into that with the regulations, all of that. So I want to move to one of my favorite topics, which is coffee. I've heard that you're something of a coffee specialist. So I'd be interested to hear about any particular, you know, quality, safety concerns, or anything specific to coffee itself. And I'm also, second question, when you talk about flavoring, flavored coffee is my favorite. So talk on about coffee for a few minutes for us.
Coffee is something which is very close to me. I used to write blogs on that before like this whole food vlogging became a thing. And then I was out of the game because you open YouTube and everything or Instagram and everyone's a food vlogger now. So everyone's like already reviewing things, already like giving their opinions, which is again, fine. I mean, it's a change and everyone has to accept that change. But back in the days, like I used to go to like different cities for different cafes. And I still have those blogs on my LinkedIn timeline. Until last year, I used to do that, like visiting different cities. I used to pick 8-9 different cafes and then like make my own little map, make a little own route. I used to go there, have 3 or 4 different types of special coffees they had, what their special menu is. Again, because I work in this industry, so I used to go for more if they have the flavors, which is in the grounds, not the syrups. And again, if you can see when you talk to the owner or the baristas over there, what they are passionate on, or you can sense it because I've been doing that for a long time. Or even not, if you're passionate about coffee, you can see the person's passion completely over there or not. So a lot of the coffee places which I went, they were roasting their own beans. So if you know they're roasting their own beans, they're doing their own flavorings in the either beans or grounds or at that place itself. They are not depending on just syrups. So I used to do that. I used to love that. And lately I've been consumed, as I said, like with all the food bloggers coming in, I've stopped kind of doing that. I wouldn't say I've stopped it. I would say that like I've paused it at the moment. I'll still continue. You know, one of the journey. And I try to right now, like my focus is over here is more on the wellness and bakery side, but I joined this company and more on beverage side. But as I have worked with a lot of coffee customers before and a lot of like bigger companies. So there are a lot of co-packers and co-manufacturers, right? And when you work with them, the flavorings and not all, it's totally depend on the safety standards they use. But I would say when it comes to like flavors, especially in the beans or the greens, which we call the greens, there are like very common flavors such as vanilla, hazelnut, caramel. These are like the most common. And then you come on specialty coffees where there are a lot of like other companies because they have the volume to send to different companies. They can afford to buy specialty flavors. So when it comes to that, it's mostly like you can work around on more innovation on those. But let me tell you one thing which I learned is like you have more liberty to be creative in terms of flavors and product development. in sweets or savory or even wellness as compared to like coffee. Coffee, it's really tough to show your creative side over there. It's very generic, as I said, because again, we all react to the market, right? What the market demands. As much as we are like ambitious about coffee, because I can see the passion in you. You were so excited to talk about coffee, right? Like we are passionate about coffee, but just think about the general consumer. Like for them, coffee is something like they just need it to like wake them up. So again, that market is huge, but not for creative side. That's what I feel like.
All right. So moving ahead, when you're responsible for the safety and quality in the arm of an organization that's in a different country than that you're based, maybe you can talk to us about how your experience has played into that, how that works, and, you know, maybe some of the challenges that you've seen there.
So this company, Lucta, I work for right now, is a global company. We have facilities in Spain. The company I work for, Diana Food, which is a part of Symrise now, but Diana Food was part in France. That's where the headquarters were. Symrise's headquarters were in Germany. And all of the time, I worked in tandem with all our counterparts globally, right? Because they were produced over there. I mean, for example, in Diana, like our colors or ingredients, I would say, were produced in Rennes part of the France, or like there's some over here, same with Symrise. And especially like, I remember this one time when we were collaborating with my counterparts in Germany and France, because we were working on this big project of plant-based. I'm talking about like 2020, 2021, when the plant-based industry was booming. They predicted the industry would go to $30.2 billion by 2030. So, you know, everyone, even at that time, it was like, what, $8 to $9 billion industry, if I'm not wrong. And everyone was working on this plant-based. So we were working very closely with them. And there are a lot of restrictions when it comes to like regulatory-wise, which are mostly it's allowed over here as compared to Europe, because Europe is very strict on the regulations, and which is really good. I can totally like go on that topic in the way of safety standards as compared to like the European nations or even Asia, to be honest, as compared to like US. Over here, we don't have that much of regulations. Over here, the main objective is to get products cheaper as compared to the healthier. I mean, for example, let's say in restaurant industry, most of our foods we get are either from Sysco or US foods. And that's when it is like all the restaurants mostly get from there. And then you can have different flavors and whatever they do with it, right? And what do we contain? Mostly artificial flavors, artificial colors, which are most of those ingredients are illegal in Europe. So for example, you might be eating a French fry over in US, and as compared to over in Europe, it's completely different. And I come from a different country, right? So I have literally experienced those things. That's completely different as compared to like in other parts, as compared to like US. Because again, more chemicals, cost down products, pesticides level are high and everything. So what does it do in terms of your body is like we, when I say we, I mean over here in US, we think that we gained a pound of a fat. It's usually not a pound. It's literally impossible. I mean, not impossible. You have to work so hard to gain a pound of a fat in a week. What we do is we gain a pound of inflammation. So when we consume those foods, we think that we are eating fat, that our cell is converting those food into energy or heat, but it's not. It's just converting into inflammation. So that's the so much of difference in terms of like regulation. But again, just to bring a meter down of Europe and make it a balance in between US and Europe, like we have a lot of ingredients over here in terms of like flavors, which are allowed in Europe and not allowed in US. But again, for example, making a natural butter flavor in US is much more tougher than in Europe. So an incident which has happened earlier in this nation where a certain chemical was put in, which was allowed in both Europe and US, and then a lot of lawsuits happened because of that chemical. Some people suffered a lot, and we are not allowed to put that chemical over here.
Yeah, it's interesting to get these ingredients and everything from elsewhere and then bringing them in. I'm sure that that's a big part of working for a global company like you work at.
Exactly. And again, like it's something which a lot of companies would think that like, hey, you know, like if we are global, we can try to get like work synergetically over here in Europe and in US. But again, regulations are completely different. And it's tough because a lot of the times what I have experienced specifically, and not just over here at Lukta, but over there at Diana too, where like they're like, hey, we have this formulation. You can just like take it and make it yours. And then like you can just copy it and work something out of it. And then the formula comes in front of me. I'm like, this I can't use, this I can't use, this I can't use, this I can't use. So basically it's water and sugar. Okay.
I know this is important to you is, you know, the innovation piece. And so what type of technologies have been prominent that you've been able to use with food science or anything coming up in the marketplace that you're excited about? Like, how do you incorporate technology into your work?
In terms of flavor industry, I would say technologies are enhancers mostly, or maskers. In terms of flavor industry, I would say. And because I worked in this flavor industry for most of my career, so that's how I would say those are the technologies. And again, it has worked. I'm so impressed in a way that like, if you take anything which was coming back to the plant-based industry, right? Like soy and pea protein. I mean, now you have like PD, for to complete the PDCAS, which is the whole protein cycle for all essential amino acids. Now they have added, which again, it took some time for people to realize that like you need an entire PDCAS to give a person the whole amino acids which they need. So it was initially started with pea protein or soy protein. That's where we started, right? As an industry in plant-based. So if you compare a pea protein, which you would get, let's say like 10 years back and which you get right now, it's a completely different pea protein powders or isolates. So they are mostly like crisps, which are used in like protein bars or some kind of like cookies, for example. That came with those technologies, like all those protein. The raw material sourcing is much more cleaner, much more like, and again, the processing is involved. All those became because of the maskers which we are using. You get bitter maskers, you get maskers for off notes. That's how we started the technology, I'm saying. Right? You get salt enhancers, you get cocoa enhancers. Remember like a couple of years back, even last year, was it last year? No, sorry. It was forecasted that like there will be a shortage of cocoa beans. So cocoa enhancers was a big thing in market. So those are the technologies, the boost which we give to the products. And now coming to today's world, all those proteins are not just limited to protein powders as a supplement. Now you see companies like Kodiak, which are coming out with protein oats, protein pancakes, if I'm not wrong. They have protein cookies. I recently saw they might come out in like protein desserts too. I'm not very sure. But I'm pretty sure that companies like Kodiak are coming out. How are they doing it? It's because of these technologies which we are coming out with, in terms of enhancers and maskers. And same with it, like, for example, the technologies in gluten. Like, back in the days, a gluten-free person had to face so much difficulties. Now you can have a gluten removal and, like, gluten-free powder, and you can literally substitute a gluten-free powder or, like, a flour to an all-purpose flour in the ratio of 1-to-1. And those achievements in last 10 years is because of the technologies which we have produced. Again, for that, you might need to add mouthfeel enhancers. That's again a new technology. So it's not just one technology. Every technology is dependent on other technology. But as a holistic, as a combined, it comes out as something which is in innovation, which is something this society might not have thought. And again, the change of these technologies is exponentially increasing. So the growth from N-10 to N-9 was at a slower rate to what it is from N-9 to N-1. Every year, the change is so rapid, it's exponentially growing. And you might never know that what we can attain. And that's the beauty of science.
I like that. That's the beauty of science. Just a couple more questions for you. So I think like in your role, something I was interested in is, what are the main challenges that you're facing right now?
I would say challenges again is would be more to the questions which you raised earlier, like how do we marry or like attain quality and safety with innovation and production. So for me, it's mostly about like if I develop something, right? I develop from the point of view that like, hey, I want to develop the best thing for my consumer. Again, this is not that I'm like not humble or like boasting on myself. I'm just saying that like for me, like what I do is like I see it as like this is my way of giving back to the society, which has given me so much. So for me, like if I'm giving back to society, it's more about the best way or the best product you can give it in terms of both innovations and quality and safety. So how do we do that? So when I develop something, I want to have like no preservatives, I would say, everything natural. But when it comes to the consumer, does it remain the same thing? Those are the challenges. Again, as I said, the things are changing. So when you develop a flavor, the flavor chemist has to go through a lot of checks in terms of regulatory. So I would say like those challenges are mostly like very common in day-to-day lives. But if I have to think about something which is like challenge on a niche side, I would say, I think most of the challenges which we face is like, even if you develop something and your client or your customer approves it and they go ahead with it, it's how the consumer who is receiving it. That's again a different kind of a challenge too, I feel like.
Taking it all the way through. And then how does that resonate with the end consumer? I could definitely see that.
Because sometimes what do you think? Again, this is a part of a challenge too, which is not we think like this challenge. Is like you have to unlearn things when you are developing a different product. Because you think from a very technical point of view, right? So like, oh, let's send this, tasting like this. I'm getting a smoke note and not a charred note and this. You go in all technicalities in terms of sensory evaluations too. But you don't realize that the end product is going to be consumed by someone who is untrained. So how that person is going to perceive your product, that's something you have to unlearn every time. Because for you, something is more technical as compared to them. And you like complicate things just for yourself. And the other person who is the end consumer might not even see like that. This is a personal challenge for me, which I faced and I overcame it. Because my background was in food engineering, right? And then I did my food science. And then I directly came in like product research development. I had zero culinary skills when I joined this industry. I had to learn each and everything from start in terms of like how I'm going to use the knife, how I'm going to use the chopping board, how I'm going to use the stove, how I'm going to use the oven, everything, what goes in what order. And that was a really big learning experience for me. And that was a challenge I faced.
It's easier to consider, we talked about that end consumer and that final product, if you're doing that, right? So I just have one more question for you. If you could go back in time to your younger self, what kind of advice would you give yourself as a new, starting in this industry? What would you say?
So I would have said to myself, there are a lot of steps which I've taken. Again, I don't regret anything in my life. Everything is and was a learning experience. But from what I've learned right now, if I have to go back, I would have said that I should not have skipped on my internship. I should have taken the internship opportunity and took as many work opportunities I got and learning experiences as compared to like trying to like contemplate on situations rather than contemplating. I should have made a decisions on a lot of stuff in terms of like education or in terms of internships, I would say. That's when like a lot of my job opportunities got very limited when I didn't have work experience. And in terms of that too, like when I did my bachelor's, I immediately jumped in my master's. I should have taken a job opportunity or a break in terms of like what I really liked. That's how I should not have ended up in food safety and quality assurance. But also like my master's was more generic in terms of food science. If I knew that like I was really interested in like coffee or like alcoholic beverages in terms of my just after my bachelor's, I would have done my master's in more specific category in terms of my major in something in more coffee, or my courses would have been chosen on based off my interest. So that's the one advice I would give to myself.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. I really enjoyed this conversation. And to our listeners, thank you also for joining us. And we can't wait to speak again on Food Tech Talk. Thank you for joining us for another bite-sized nugget of Food Tech Talk, supply chain insights from farm to fork. To learn more about Trustwell and its technology platform that connects product formulation, nutrition analysis, and compliant labeling with traceability, recall readiness, and supply chain transparency, please visit www.trustwell.com. Thanks for listening.